Blog Talk Radio.
I can see clearly now, the rain is gone. I can see all obstacles in my way. Gone are the dark clouds that had me blind. It's gonna be a bright, sunshiny day. Gonna be a bright, sunshiny day. I think I can make it now. The pain is gone. All of the bad feelings have disappeared. Here is that rainbow I've been praying for. Gonna be bright.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay, and welcome to the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexity of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my guests and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. If you have any comments you'd like to make during or after this broadcast, you can email me to at bonk@aol.com. That's bonk@aol.com. Although I've had a number of wonderful, top-notch guests on this show, I'm always so excited when this particular guest comes on. So welcome back, Kathy Holguin. Thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you, Bonnie, for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
You know, I always say, Kathy, and this is the truth, that if I had to go to a therapist, out of all the therapists that I've met through the years and all the ones that I work with through this show, you are my ultimate therapist that I would go to. You'd be the person I would come to because I feel that you would be most beneficial for me, as you are for all the women who I send your way or who meet you who are in our situation. And I think it's not only just because of your comforting manner, with, you know, as being a therapist, but also the fact that you've lived this life. And maybe you could talk to our listeners a little bit about that, because we have a lot of new people in our network since you were last here.
Oh, I am more than honored to talk to your guests, Bonnie, as always. And I just want to tell everyone that I understand what you're going through. I know exactly how it feels to be in your situation. And anything I can do to help, I am here. So, Bonnie, thank you for that wonderful vote of confidence. That is just makes my day. It's so encouraging to to know that.
Well, I'm being honest with you. I know that the women who have told me that they've gone to you have benefited so much from you and seeing the light and seeing how to move on and how to pass through so many of the different phases that we go through while we're grieving. So, Kathy, mm-hmm. why don't you tell people your story and how it's all started?
Oh, it's interesting. As I was thinking about talking, I thought, wow, it's amazing how every year I have more and more insight. When I was 7 months pregnant with my third child, my husband told me that he wanted to be admitted to a psych ward because he was suicidal. And that day changed my life. He told me that on my birthday. And, of course, at that time in my life, everything was about him and how to make sure that he was taken care of. And it didn't matter that I had two other children and I was pregnant with our third son. So tells you a little bit about me at the time. This was in 1995, so it has been a lot of time has passed. But since that time, he was admitted, and his therapist, thankfully, told him that he needed to tell me that he needed to come clean, that he had been acting out, probably had been acting out our whole marriage, although to this day he won't admit to that. But that he had been acting out, and it took me 4 years to finally come to the point where I needed to move on so that I could actually stop having migraines, stop having chest pain. I tried to hold it together and make it work, and there was no way it was going to work. He told me that he could be healed, you know, this was just a one-time thing. And then, of course, I wanted to believe him, so I did. We ended up having another pregnancy after the disclosure and before we got divorced, and we ended up having twins. So fast forward, after the twins were born, I had about 3 more years with him. And then I found out that he had been acting out the whole time and just was leading a double life. So I was, I never felt like I knew what was real. And the trauma and the betrayal resulting from that experience took me a long, long time to work through and to get over. At the time, I was not a therapist. I did not have an education, and so I had to start from ground zero and get my education along with raising 5 kids by myself, pretty much, and then all the craziness that ensued from there. Once he realized he could not manipulate or control me, I became the enemy, and so he set out to destroy me, literally. He tried to call social services on me probably 3 or 4 times with false allegations. He tried to take my children. There's just a lot of things that he did that were intended to destroy me. He knew I wanted to be a therapist, and so he set out to make it so that I could never be licensed as a therapist. And just, Bonnie knows I'm a Christian, and so event after event after event happened, and then he basically was unsuccessful, thankfully. And so it's just amazing how when we stand for truth and the truth of our own situation and the truth of who we are, I had to pay the price. I pretty much lost everything. I lost my home. I lost everything that was material. And but as I share with people, you know, losing everything was worth it because I got myself. And I was able to
have my own life and my own dignity and my own goals and dreams and aspirations, and I fought for that for myself. So, and that's pretty much what I help other people do now. So it's kind of cool. It took me 13 years to get licensed as a marriage and family therapist, but I am licensed in California. And I do work with women from everywhere. I just work with them in coaching capacity strictly for this issue. And so I have some limitations with what I can do with people if there's any kind of ideation or anything like that. But mostly the women that I work with, they just really need a blueprint for what this looks like as we move forward. And usually after you come out of the shock phase, which takes a long time, at least it did for me, then there's, you know, there's a plan that gets put in place. And I'm here to tell you that life looks wonderful on the other side. It really does. I have a wonderful husband that I remarried. We've been married almost 8 years now. We dated for 4, and he absolutely repaired my heart and my faith in men after I was able to heal and give myself time. So we have 8 kids. I have 5, and then he has 3, and we have some little grandkids. So I'm on the other side of it, and I am here to tell you that life can be wonderful, but this is hell, and nobody can minimize that, because that's the truth. So, does that help, Bunny?
It does. I just want to ask you a few questions. In your early years of marriage, would you say that you had a good marriage or not?
Oh, yes. I had the marriage that everybody looked to. My husband is extremely talented. He was a worship leader at our church. We have a non-denominational Christian church, quite large. And we were the family that, you know, the kids would come up front with us, and, you know, we were on stage most of the time, whether we wanted to be or not. And my husband was quite magnetic. Everybody wanted to be around him and wanted his favor. And he's extremely talented and attractive, and so everyone wanted to be with him and a part of what he was doing. So when everything happened, it was just a complete shock to everyone. And so, yes, and he was my best friend. So it was that made it even that much harder. I'm trying to make it so my phone doesn't run out of battery here.
Yeah, because one of the things that we've been bringing up in our support chat as of recently, we have a number of women who were in really good marriages. Many of our women were not, but there's a few that really were. They really had many good years. They weren't abusive years. They weren't, you know, most of us suffer under these marriages from the very beginning or shortly thereafter. But these are women who had 20, 30 good years with their husbands. And they seem, you know, be in total shock when something like this happens, because they're totally blindsided. They never knew there was a problem, and they were very happy in their marriage, and they can't understand now, after 20 years, 30 years, a wonderful best friend relationship, how everything has just gone the opposite direction. And I think a lot of times it's harder for people to heal who came out of good marriages, because they're so blindsided by this, and they didn't have the problems that the rest of us have. And that's why I was asking you about your marriage in the early years, whether or not, you know, you had what you consider to be a good, solid marriage. So was it a surprise to you when things started changing?
Oh, yes. I always tell people, literally an airplane could have landed in my living room and I would have been less surprised. So, yes, my husband grew up on a farm. He's 6'4". He's quite, you know, manly, as I would have, like, assumed, but there were no other signs. There was nothing that would have alerted me to the fact that he struggled with this. And I was very innocent. I was very naive. But even at that, it was
I was still not prepared to look at some of the circumstances and things that were happening. I was getting weird phone calls at night. I mean, there were so many things happening that I trusted him. I completely trusted him without a doubt. And so I think that's one of the reasons it is so traumatic, because there aren't any other signs that you can look to. Even sometimes when you look back, it's not obvious. And that is part of the betrayal trauma piece, because when you're betrayed, you are betrayed by somebody who is supposed to have your back and somebody that is supposed to be there for you. So, yeah, and I think it's harder sometimes for women that have good marriages, as they perceive it, because it's even more shocking, I guess. And so I would tell people it was like, trying to cut off my right arm, you just don't do that. And that's why it took me so long to give myself permission to leave the marriage as well. Because I was literally at the time divorcing my best friend.
Were the religious factors part of the reason why primarily the reason why you stayed?
Yes. I think.
Or did you think you could change it? Did you think it could possibly change?
I thought definitely could change. Yes. I thought that there would be a miracle and that it would be something that God could work out, because my thinking was, why would he want to choose that and give up everything that he has? His home, his family, everything. And that's why it took me so long to divorce, because I kept thinking he's going to realize what the cost is here, and he isn't going to want to pay the cost. And I was very wrong. That was all he wanted, was his lifestyle. And so I think just understanding that somebody has the capacity to be that divided in what they present to the world and who they really are and what they're willing to do to have it for themselves. And that was, I don't come from that background, and that's not my experience with humanity. And so that's part of why everything in my world felt completely upside down. I literally didn't know what was real and what was not real.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the trauma.
Did anybody in your church ever say anything to you about it?
So, unfortunately, in our church, they kind of helped spur the notion that it would get better, that he could get better. Like, they just gave him enough time, enough space, enough support, like put him on a sabbatical, things like that. Part of me really bought into that narrative, and I didn't know any better, right? And so it wasn't helpful, and I think part of that was their ignorance as well. I think they tried to be as supportive as they could, but the problem was that the financial aspect of it was so devastating for me that the church really should have stepped up more to help, and that's part of my, campaign to get churches to wake up, but that's a whole other thing.
No, that's an important campaign, because they keep misleading people to stay in situations that are not natural situations, trying to make them into natural situations, giving false hope to people that this can change through prayer, or that,
exactly,
you can still,
and
am I right?
Right. And I think that's why, a lot of women come to me who are Christians or have the same background I do, because there's not a big voice out there, first of all, that has an experience with the situation, but also that really speaks what
what the Bible really talks about is in terms of truth. When somebody abuses you or abandons you or takes advantage of you, that is not, it is not okay to stay in those situations, to continue to be wounded. I always tell people that, you know, God released me way before I released myself from this marriage.
Uh-huh.
And the what I was kept hearing in my own prayer life was, it's not my intention for you, my daughter, to be in this horrible situation where you're being taken advantage of. It is not my desire for you. And, you know, darkness and light does not need to be intermingled here. And because the darkness, the stuff he was doing, I had no idea at the time, but the stuff he was doing was so repulsive. And as I began to really understand what he was involved in, that is actually the catalyst for what caused me to finally kick him out for the last time and divorce him. Because I was afraid he was going to gay bars in downtown L.A., bathhouses, and I was afraid somebody would find out that he had five children and would follow him home and abduct one of our kids. Because I had no idea who he was with, what kind of people he was surrounding himself with, and what kind of risk he was putting our children. Because my kids would walk to school and walk home. And finally, that was the last straw. In, unfortunately, it wasn't because it was good enough for me. It was about my kids, but that's okay. You know, it was the right thing to do. And mamas will always protect their children, so no matter what.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, some of these guys really have no fear as far as, you know, the danger that they attract. My ex-husband was the same way. I mean, he brought danger into his home, and in fact, his niece was living in it at the time. Somebody came in that he met at one of these places, robbed him, and beat her up. You know, it was so, you know, like I say, just they don't have any concerns about anything as far as safety. And I always think to myself, you know, it's one thing to be gay. It's another thing how you handle it with your family. Like when I have women who tell me that their husbands are bringing men into their homes and having sex in their bedrooms while they're out of the house, like violating probably every kind of possible limit. To me, once you go into somebody's home in their bed, in their marital bed, and you're having sex in there, and they think of this as something exciting, I mean, I just don't understand this thinking. Do you?
Yeah, I don't understand that thinking, but I understand the desire to keep your family together and to want to believe that somehow, some way, your situation can be what you always hoped and thought it was or wanted to be. And so, you know, people go into pretty significant states of denial about what's happening or about their ability to tolerate what's happening for the greater good. And my point is that the greater good needs to be you. The greater good needs to be walking in the truth of your circumstance and doing it in a way that's healthy and honoring to you as a person. And when someone does that and betrays you at that level, that's not honoring. And, you know, and then there's impact on the kids too. So the kids know that things are going on. They become anxious because their experience isn't validated either. And that's also a big problem when we stay in denial.
And also, I always say that it's so much better to come from a broken home than to live in a broken home. You know, when I hear women say, well, I'm staying for the sake of the children, I'm sorry, I just don't see that as being, you know, valid, because of the fact that when children grow up in chaos, you know, their own lives are chaotic, their sense of self-esteem is lowered. You know, we're not doing them any favors by having them grow up in a chaotic household filled with anger, filled with fighting, filled with cheating, filled with lying. Do you agree with that as a family therapist or not?
Absolutely do agree with that. And, you know, there was such a sense of relief for me when I finally chose myself and my children's well-being over the attempt to keep the family system together. And
uh-huh.
you could just feel within the home, I could feel my kids' collective sigh of relief that
uh-huh.
finally we weren't living with this unspoken tragedy, right? This death, this dead corpse that we were like trying to revive all the time in terms of our marriage. And I had to work through how to appropriately talk to each of my kids based on their level of understanding. And I had really good advice from someone, I don't even remember who it was, but they basically told me that, you know, ask your kids what it is they want to know or need to know, and then be honest with them in an age-appropriate situation. So for me, you know, my younger ones would say, you know, why can't daddy stay? And I would say, because you have to be able to trust the person you're married to, and mommy can't trust daddy anymore. Oh, daddy did bad things. Mommy can't trust daddy, and you can't be married to somebody you don't trust. So I was trying to implement a life value for them so that they could carry that on, right? And then as they got older, we were able to have more and more and more discussions with an ongoing dialogue. And so they grew up feeling that they can trust their own sense of what's happening around them rather than questioning their own reality. And that's what happens when we don't talk to kids and we're not honest with them and we don't validate their experience. Is they do get very confused about what they're experiencing. And then when they tend to question themselves rather than, because they're going to trust the adult. And so we have a responsibility, I think, to walk in the truth of our circumstance, even with our kids.
Kathy, we have a number of women are in a situation where the mother is the caretaker, the father is not around very much, but the children are siding with the father and turning on their mothers. Yeah. Do you have any advice for that?
Well, I think moms always get a bad rap. And I, you know, when I said that he was dead set on destroying me, he tried to do that. He tried to get the kids to side with him, and it was terrible because they were so young, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so as a mom, I had to be really intentional about how I handled those situations. So you never want to throw dad under the bus because they are part of dad. And so it
right.
really undermines their own sense of self when we do
uh-huh.
that. And so I use it as an opportunity to ask them, oh, when daddy's, well, how did that make you feel when daddy said that about mommy? Oh, that made me feel terrible, and that made me not want to trust you, right? Or whatever the response was. And so what's a lot of what I do in counseling is I'll help parents learn how to validate their children's experience and feelings. And then in doing so, you're actually building more relationship and more trust because it's such an opposite experience than what they're going to get from the one who's manipulating them. And then we teach them about what does manipulation mean? What does that look like, right? So you're not directly talking about dad, but you're teaching them about a dynamic that they are very much caught up in. And then as they get older, they begin to put language to their experience because you've taught them what, you know, how to talk about their feelings, how to validate their own feelings. And then they begin to advocate for themselves. Daddy, I don't like it when you talk about mommy. Please don't do that. Right?
Uh-huh.
And you help them find the language to do that. Because at the end of the day, they're going to need that skill for the rest of their lives with him. trust me, I have grown adult children that still need to use that skill with my ex, because he has no regard for anybody else or their experience or their autonomy, because it's all about him.
Mm-hmm. That's very true. You know, you've been, you know, running in the past workshops, and they're coming up again. I wanted to talk a little bit about them, because I feel like for women this is so valuable that you have your betrayal trauma support group for straight wives. And, you know, you've run these, you know, through the past, and now you're having a new session coming up. So I want to talk a little bit about this, because I think it's so valuable for our women who are looking for help.
Yeah.
They really need to know how to move on and to try to understand what they're going through, because some of our women, and this is relatively new, you know, within the past year, last 6 months, 3 months. And I always say that healing is a process and that there's no fast way to do it. You can't rush through the stages, because if you rush, you're only going to be held back when it comes up anyway. But it looks like a really wonderful workshop. And you have 6 different workshops. Let's talk a little bit about each one of them. So the first one is about trauma and betrayal. Tell me what that's about.
Right. So it's about what to expect when you're in a traumatic state, physiologically, emotionally, and it helps. It's going to help you understand what trauma and betrayal look like, and how does it play out in your everyday life. And then how I have it structured is that I only have about 15 to 20 minutes of teaching, so to speak, or lecture, if you want to call it that. And then what I do is I open it up to the group to be able to talk about what does that look like compared to what you're experiencing? Because I really feel like as women going through this, you know, we're not the type of women that necessarily need a, quote, therapist, right?
Mm-hmm.
Basically, we've been caught up in a dynamic that we never expected to be in. And so all of a sudden now, oh, my gosh, I need a therapist, right? I'm not mentally ill. And so I really feel like my expertise kind of helps people that don't need a, quote, like, weekly therapist to understand what it is that they're going through. And then with the shared experience of other women going through it, we gain perspective and understanding. And then it's also a little more affordable. So, because, you know, I charge $140 an hour. So it's a lot more accessible and doable, where you're not having to pay like a weekly amount to get the help that you're looking for.
Mm-hmm. Well, it really breaks down to $50 a session, and you're in these sessions for an hour and a half. And I just want to tell people this is a virtual session, so you can do this from any place where you are. Also, because not everybody listens to this show on the day that we broadcast, people listen to it throughout the week, through the month, through the year. These will be ongoing workshops, so no matter when you're listening to this show, if you're interested in working with Kathy, you can get in touch with her. Her information's on the board here that you're listening to the show on, or you can always write to me to get more information. So from wherever you are, you can do this virtual workshop. The second one you have is geared on anger and confusion. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. My experience with myself, but also with a lot of the women I work with, is that anger sometimes can be a taboo feeling, like we're not allowed to get angry because then we're part of the problem and not part of the solution. And so what I try to do is help see the value of anger and how anger can help with confusion. Because when we suppress our feelings, it creates more confusion for us, rather than being able to name how we're feeling. And my hope is usually to help normalize feelings of anger, especially coming from a Christian community and a Christian perspective. Anger is not usually something that
a lot of women feel comfortable expressing. And so it takes time to learn how to express your anger and do it in a way that's healthy and beneficial to you. In other words, so you're not acting out in passive aggressive ways and things like that. So understanding that there's a real need for anger, and that anger is a great way to fuel action and movement, but it doesn't have to define who you are. And my hope is that people can work through anger so that they can have room for lots of other emotions. So,
and I always
anger
say
just
that,
runs
you know,
the
anger
show.
Is always a good, mm-hmm. I always say anger is important because it shows that you're standing up and fighting back for yourself. However,
right.
If you get stuck in with anger and you're there too long, that anger can turn into bitterness. And then bitterness
yes.
is only detrimental to you. It's not hurting anyone
yes.
else, but it is hurting you. And I know some women who
yes.
really get stuck there, and they need to move
yes.
out of there. And it's really important. I explain to them, you know, at some point, doesn't mean that your anger is invalidated, but you have to let go for yourself. Right?
Exactly. Right. Right. Yeah. It's a process, right? And
uh-huh.
when you're angry and you have 10 other women to process your anger with, it's a lot easier at the end of
uh-huh.
the day to walk out. Because it's like, imagine, you know, you've got this pitcher that's full of water and it's just at the brim, right? And all of that water is all your anger. It's just a way of kind of letting it spill out a little bit. And then you
uh-huh.
have room for more. You have room for something else. And that's what we want. We want you to have room for joyful experiences with your kids. You know, we want you to have room for a lot of other things in your life, a lot of other emotions. But if anger isn't processed, you're absolutely right. It turns into anxiety, depression, bitterness. And so it's important. Anger is a really important component in healing and getting
uh-huh.
through this trauma.
In your next workshop, something very interesting that most of us learn about the hard way, personality disorders. Talk a little bit about
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
We're all married to men with personality disorders on top of being gay.
Pretty
Go
much.
Figure that one out.
Yeah. I'll never forget my friend told me when I was going through the worst of it. She's a therapist and she said, Kathy, he's not only gay, he's a sociopath.
Right.
I was like,
exactly.
Really?
You just don't get gay. It just doesn't come alone as a
yes.
you know, disqualification
yes.
of being your husband. You have to have gay and narcissist,
yes.
gay and sociopath, gay and psychopath.
Yep.
You know?
Yep.
Whatever
gay
path they want to take, but
personality.
There's a path there, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And it's and there's like narcissism. There are so many different types of narcissism that a lot of times people don't realize that they may be in a relationship with a covert narcissist and they don't even recognize it as narcissism because, you know, that they may not be, you know, the star of the show. They may not want to be the center of the party, you know, but they may have narcissistic behaviors that have got you trapped. So it's recognizing that. And I love that because as you move forward, you know what to look for in terms of what to be careful of, you know, when you do move forward in other relationships. And it's also helpful.
And so true.
You realize, oh my gosh, my mom is a narcissist. I didn't even know it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever.
And it's interesting because last week we had Dr. Felstad on our show. You met her when you
mm-hmm.
we were in California, and she
mm-hmm.
just had a new book come out on how to navigate raising your children when you have a narcissistic parent. And, you know, she's done a lot of research on this, and it was really startling to me that she said there's between 45 and 63 million people in this country who are absolutely narcissists. And
yep.
that, you know, unfortunately, people like us who are empaths, you know, always seem to attract
yep.
them, you know, and that's something that you have
yes.
to really work on to avoid. Is that correct?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. You have to know what you're dealing with, and then you have to know, I call it feeding the narcissist. Like, you have to know how to be in a relationship with a narcissist so that you walk away knowing that your needs are not going to get met and why. Because it's not about the fact that you're not worthy. It's because they are incapable. Big difference.
But I think one of the problems, and I'm not sure at what level you work with this, which one of these workshops, that women have to also be honest about themselves as far as making some changes and not allowing themselves to go through this again, that there's something within them that needs to change. And I think that many of us go into these relationships because we ourselves had dysfunctional relationships growing up, you know, with our families. Mm-hmm. And not everybody, but a lot of us. You know, some of our women came from families where there was abuse, alcoholism, drug addiction, mental illness. Mm-hmm. And so for many women, you know, something looked much better than what they had, even if it wasn't everything. And I think that going back and having to examine why you allow yourself to get into a relationship like this, because I know so many times women go out again and repeat this. Now, it's not going to be with a gay man, but it will be, you know, necessarily, but it will be with somebody else with another personality disorder. And unless you can see for yourself what's, you know, the right thing for you and how to change yourself to at least want more in your life. So do you work on that on any of these workshops?
Oh, yeah, right. So that's sort of the underlying, I guess, approach or foundation that's the narrative I work with, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we all, because I'm psychodynamic in terms of my therapeutic approach, so we all have a way of being in relationship from the blueprint that we internalized growing up. And so if we come from a situation where it's not okay to have wants or needs, then we learn to be needless and wantless is the higher standard. And so we don't learn that having needs or wants is okay. And so we need to figure out where that comes from, where we internalize that message, at what age and stage of our life, and then we get a chance to correct it and do something different. So that's really, I think, for the most part, with most of the women I have worked with, there has definitely been either a traumatic event that has either been exposed or subconscious. And in my case, I had a traumatic event happen when I was 8 years old. And it was from some boys that were older, and adolescent boys. And I think that men scared me. And so I think subconsciously, it was not a conscious thing. I honestly think I picked a gay man because I thought I would be safe. So that realization for me came from a lot of my own work. And realizing, okay, so that's where that propensity, that's where I internalized. And so once I figured that out, I was okay with approaching men, my husband, who has nothing like that going on for him. You know, he's a construction, you know, carpenter, and, you know, I mean, you've met him. He's, you know, there's no question. But I think his personality and the way he carries himself would have frightened me had I not done my own work. So absolutely, people have to do their own work so that they don't find themselves in the same situation.
Mm-hmm. And even if it's not with someone gay, it's with somebody who's not the right person for you. So it's not necessarily you're going to meet another gay man, but you will meet another man with a personality disorder, which is no better. All right, then you have the next workshop about legal concerns. Could you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, so in California, I was a family law paralegal for 20 plus years, and before I was a therapist. And so I kind of have a unique blending of insight into what the legal system looks like in terms of procedurally and what you can expect when you're going through a divorce or you're even contemplating divorce. You have to do some pre-planning. And so we're going to talk about that a little bit. and then talk about what are some of the, now each state is different in terms of, you know, their laws pertaining to divorce, but the procedural aspect is pretty much the same. So just some things to talk about and look at, and because I think I'd handled my own divorce from beginning to end. I went to all, I represented myself at all the hearings. I prepared all of the pleadings. So I have a good inside view as to what, and there were, he requested restraining orders and all kinds of fun stuff. So I, it was great that I was uniquely prepared to do that, because I couldn't have afforded an attorney to do that for me. And so, you know, I help a lot of women actually kind of navigate that system.
Okay, so you'll be giving some helpful hints on that for navigation, right?
Mm-hmm, yep.
You know, I'm just curious before we move on, when it comes to divorce, for states where there is full divorce, do you believe women should go for the full divorce?
Oh, absolutely. Because someone who, so, now I should qualify that. If he didn't sit down with you and say, I'm bisexual or I'm gay, but I want to be married to you, are you good with that? Right? Which is probably not going to happen. Outside of that, then yes, then you've been defrauded. And so if there's such a thing as a fault, there's a state where there is fault divorce, that is not the case in California, so I don't know much about
right.
it. But yes, absolutely, because it's a fraud. It was a fraud perpetrated on you because it wasn't disclosed.
Yes, there's a number of states that still have fault divorce as a possibility. And I always tell women, try to go for the fault because, number one, it can be more to you financially. And also because you don't have to feel like such a victim. I hate when they use that term, no fault, when there is fault. Having a gay husband,
right.
there is fault. I can say whatever else you want, but that's the fault right there. And at least it makes you feel as less than a victim, you know, in some respect, that at least the government's recognizing that. Okay, next you have the workshop. Your fifth workshop is about grief. Talk a little bit about that.
So I am certified by the Grief Recovery Network as a grief recovery therapist. And so I do, I have like a 12-week class that I do, we do grief work. And grief work can be quite involved because grief is defined as the loss of a hope, dream, or expectation. It's not grief just simply related to someone passing away. And so we term that as complicated grief. And so what I do, that's I just give a little tiny snippet of what grief looks like, what it is, and how we process it. And so the seven stages of grief that people are aware of and have heard about, it's not really appropriate or accurate when you're dealing with complicated grief and loss. So we talk more about it in terms of it being a loss of a hope, dream, or expectation. Because let's face it, you know, you have, you're married to this person for 20 years, you have kids, you have grandkids, you know, we all figure, you know, kind of think about what we want that to look like and, you know, as we grow older. And so sometimes it takes an intentional application of a different way of thinking and a different narrative to be able to work through some of that. So you have to intentionally process the loss of those things. And that is not easy to do, and it doesn't happen quickly.
Well, that's for sure. And then your last session, of course, is called Moving Forward. And talk a little bit about that.
So Moving Forward is to help people kind of see beyond the circumstance that they're in right now. Because trust me, you understand that, Bonnie. You don't really feel like you have a future. You don't feel like there is a there's moving forward is this sort of a great idea, but the day-to-day doesn't feel like there's ever going to be any hope for a future, much less a happy one. And so what I'm trying to do is help women to visualize what they enjoy, what they like, what would make them happy outside of their life that they've had with this person who is their best friend. So that's very difficult to do, but that's the intent. And then I share a lot about my own process in that. And because I'm the one that kind of is on the other side of it, and I can tell you there is a future and there is a full life ahead for you. You're not going to be
defined. And for some women, the full life doesn't necessarily mean having to find a partner again. Now, I'd like to emphasize that some women say, well, I don't want to meet somebody again. Well, that's perfectly fine. You can still be happy yourself. No one says that you need a man to make you complete, right?
Right, absolutely. In fact, if you haven't reached that point, you probably shouldn't get into a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Because you really should be, you should have that, we call it locus of control, right? That
mm-hmm.
inner part of you needs to be satisfied with you and happy with who you are and what your goals and dreams and aspirations are before you can ever be happy with anybody else, because it's not anybody else's responsibility to make you happy. And, you know, it's part of it, but that's the gift that you get to give to yourself.
And I think that's so true. I see some of our women who have been through this for a long period of time, you know, they're very happy in their life and they're not looking to meet
mm-hmm.
anyone. Other women feel mm-hmm. differently. Other women say, look, you know, I want to share my life with someone. I had 20 years, 30 years, but I thought I had a good marriage and, you know, I want that back again. Or I had a lousy marriage and I want to find out what a good marriage is. You know, and so
mm-hmm.
people want to pursue others. So, but if you don't
mm-hmm.
want to, I always tell women, don't feel you're less than or not as good as, there's something wrong with you. You know, it just may
mm-hmm.
not be in the work for you now or maybe forever,
mm-hmm.
and that's fine too, as long as you're happy. I know for me, it
mm-hmm.
took 11 years before I was willing to even think about meeting someone again. And in that 11
mm-hmm.
years, I had to build myself up like you. You know, I was a high school dropout.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had a GED.
Mm-hmm.
I had to go and now get, you know, go to college and get my bachelor's
mm-hmm.
and my master's degree, you know, until I could
mm-hmm.
feel a sense of fulfillment that I had done something positive in my life. And I was very happy while I was doing this. I was not looking to meet anyone else. But then,
mm-hmm.
of course, one day, you know, it changed. My heart opened up again, and I did want to meet someone. So that could happen to
mm-hmm.
you, even if you don't think it could. I've seen it happen to a number of our women who really felt they will never meet somebody again, but they did. So
mm-hmm.
you just have to find where your happy point is. But I agree with you totally. Until you can find happiness within yourself, you're going to make the same mistakes again. You cannot count on people to make you happy. I mean, they can only enhance your happiness or build on the relationship happiness. But if you're not happy within yourself, you're bound to just jump at someone and pick the wrong person again. Would you say that's probably true?
Absolutely. And, you know, the good news is that when joy is coming from within yourself, then you have complete control.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody else can take that from you. No circumstance, no, you know, no change. Nothing can take that from you. You can feel sad, you can grieve losses, but that internal sense of self needs to be solid and in place and immovable before you can be whole for someone else. Because that's to their benefit as well. So, you know, you want to have a healthy relationship. You don't want to have, you know, an interdependent or codependent relationship with someone. And it takes time to learn what that looks like.
I was just curious that in these workshops, do you hit it all on the issue of boundaries, setting boundaries?
Yeah, that's kind of like woven throughout. You know, it's hard to set boundaries when you have been when each of your boundaries has been, you know, annihilated. And boundaries have to come from people who have a really strong sense of self. So, because then you know when you're being violated. When you come through a betrayal and a trauma, you don't really, it's hard to have a sense of what is appropriate and what's not appropriate. So it takes time to sort of create what that looks like for you. And because let's face it, you know, when you have someone that's betrayed you and has, and you're still in the marriage, there's a boundary issue.
Uh-huh.
Because you know, if you have, you know, an appropriate sense of your own self-worth, there's no way that is ever going to be okay.
And that's true. And I think even if we had a good sense of self-worth when we... Which is a good skill also.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I think many of us, though, you know, even if we had good self-worth to a point when we started these marriages, by the time we're done with them, we're different people than we started out. I know for sure I was. So I think that's an issue that, you know, you can help with also. And even though these workshops are really valuable, Kathy, also, once again, I want to mention, if I had to go to a therapist, Kathy is the woman who I would go to. Because I know that she understands. I've watched her in action. I've watched her with people. I've seen the results. And that she can definitely get you through this. So even if you don't want to be part of a group, you can certainly go to her on your own. So, Kathy, I feel really bad because we only have two, three minutes left. Your workshop is supposed to be starting this week. Is there any chance they could be postponed till after the holidays or if somebody doesn't make it in right now?
Yeah,
are they like ongoing?
Of
they
course.
Can come in at any point?
Yeah, they could come in at any point. If I don't, I actually pushed up starting it so that I could be available for women because it's Christmas week. The holidays are so difficult. And I was thinking that having maybe that edge of support would be helpful. But yeah, absolutely. It's all, you know, it's flexible. We have to learn to be flexible in this culture and in this climate and with this, and with this trauma. Yeah.
Okay. And also it is virtual, but let's say, can people just do it by phone or no?
Yes. It's, I just hesitate because it depends. It's not as secure in terms of privacy and confidentiality when it's by phone.
Okay, so is this like a Zoom kind of meeting or?
It is. It's through my software that I use for my practice, and so it is HIPAA compliant, which means that it's all confidential and no one can listen in. And so it's really easy. I just get your email and then I send you a link, and then and then you just open the link. So it's pretty easy to do.
Oh, that sounds pretty doable. So for women who want to get through this season with the help, Kathy is here for you. And Kathy, I can't thank you enough for doing the show again. You know, it always goes so fast when you're on here because there's so much to talk about. But I want to wish you a wonderful holiday season. And, you know, thank you so much for being there for our women and making such a difference in their lives. Also, I just want to mention Kathy is good friends with Heather, who was on our show a few weeks ago. These are my two favorite girls from California Girls, right? I'll tell you. Girls have it.
We love you.
Both of you. So please send Heather my love also. And I'm hoping that we will all get together again as soon as COVID's over. I'm going to plan my next healing weekend. And so hopefully you will. I know. I'm so excited about it. I'm hoping by the summer that we can. I'm going to be waiting for you. But nice, and thank you so much again. And you know, I love you. Thanks for being part of the show. And to all of our women, I will be back here for our New Year's edition next week. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays to all of you. And I'm here if you need me. Just write to me at bonk@aol.com. And I'll be happy to send you Kathy's information also. All right, Kathy, have a wonderful holiday. St. Patrick, my love.
I will. It was nice to see. It was nice speaking with you.
Same here, sweetie. I love you.
I love you,
too. Good night,
everybody. Bye, guys.
Good night, everyone. Bye-bye.
Good night.